Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Representative Kasten is on the phone. Thanks for joining us again, Sean. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good. Good morning.
Where are you today, by the way? Are you also in Washington?
No, I stayed in Illinois. I was planning on heading out, but I have a house full of people with sniffles, and out of an abundance of caution, thought best to go get tests before we start traveling.
Do you have the results of those tests?
No, my first result came back clean, I'm hoping it stays that way, but we're still waiting for everybody else.
Everybody panics or almost apologizes if they so much as sneeze in public now. I guess as a member of Congress, you have to be especially careful about that, huh?
Yeah, and you'd hate to go. I mean, the truth is, you know, we're all vaccinated, we're all boosted. All the signs seem to be that Omicron seems to be mild for most people who fit that category, but you'd hate to spread it to somebody who's not as protected.
I want to talk to you about January 6th, but just you mentioned Omicron. Everybody's deferring to the state, city, and the federal experts on COVID-19. Do you concur with them generally? For instance, should the Chicago Public Schools be in person right now as a result of that guidance?
Well, I'm certainly not going to weigh in on the issue there. I think students want to learn, parents want to have students learning, teachers want to be safe. The challenge that we have right now is that this Omicron has come on so quickly that I think, as you know and as all your listeners know, it's really hard to get a test right now. And what's the appropriate thing to do in a workplace if you don't know whether you're going to be protected, whether you're going to be spreading? How do you be careful about that? And you know, we worked really hard to get vaccines available. We worked really hard to get testing available. And unfortunately, we still have a significant number of people who have not taken the vaccines, and this is spreading. And I think it just creates difficulties that we don't have to in our society. And my request to everybody is go get the vaccine, get yourself protected. This is not about you. This is about looking out for your fellow man and your fellow woman.
And that message just isn't good enough. Someday we're going to hopefully have learned a lesson about communication, because the science isn't enough. It's a communication problem right now.
Well, you know, it's appropriate, I think, to tie this into January 6th, right? I mean, our country was founded by people who said that if you don't like what the government tells you to do, you can rebel against it and declare your independence. And then they created a constitution to rally around that we've protected for some 230-odd years. And there have always been voices in our country that have said it's more important to protect your individual freedom than it is to look out for the collective good. Those voices have never been particularly constructive, but they've always been present. And I think those of us who, you know, have positions of authority and, you know, the ability to get on radio programs like this, or, you know, journalists or whatever, I think have an obligation to remind us that, you know, what makes us great is that we are united. It's not just our pluribus, but it's e pluribus unum, right? We're all in this together, and we've got to all just keep reminding ourselves of that.
Do you believe, though, that the people that rallied on January 6th and then stormed the Capitol sincerely believed that the election was being stolen, that they were acting patriotically? Is that possible?
I think there are always a large number of people in any society who can be persuaded by people to do foolish things. The fact that there was an act of terror committed, I hold the people who attacked no more culpable than I think one would hold Mohammed Atta culpable for 9/11. Obviously, he was a horrible person. Obviously, these people attacked our capital. But they were motivated and inspired to do that by people who looked at the fact that the majority of the American people did not vote for them, did not vote for their values, did not vote for their beliefs, and confronted with the choice of saying, do I accept this and celebrate our democracy and our peaceful transfer of power, or do I incite a mob to attack the Capitol? They chose the latter.
You said those people. Obviously, you're referring to Donald Trump. Who else are you referring to?
There's a whole lot of people, and I think we know who they were, right? I had colleagues who were outside on the House lawn that day. The majority of the Republican members of the House signed on to an amicus brief in the weeks before the election, trying to overturn the results of four different states, in spite of the fact that 63 courts had said that was fine. They created a culture. They created an idea that the election wasn't valid. And that is so, so dangerous. It is the way that democracies die. They had the wisdom to know exactly what they were doing. They completely understood the consequences, and they decided to do it anyway. It is the very definition of treason.
So President Biden is speaking to them and everybody else today, and I was disappointed in his speech. I'll tell you what I told Senator Durbin, and I'll let you respond, but I think it was more silo speak. That is, I don't think you're going to persuade people by yelling at them that their position on that is wrong. And I'm wondering how we sort of, I don't mean to accommodate these people, but I think we need to understand them. And what do we do to forestall the next version of this, particularly if the former president runs again? How do we talk to them?
We don't have a playbook here. I was frankly very pleased with the president's speech, but at the same time, I acknowledge you have a playbook. Let's imagine that January 6th happened exactly the same way it happened. But instead of Americans who were out there, it was Canadians. Is there any question about what we would be doing as a country? We would say, you don't just attack our country because you don't like the outcome of an election. Even if you all believed it, that would be completely unjustified. I just described the War of 1812. Right. And so the question we have, and the hard thing about the playbook, is what do we do when we are attacked from within? And Abraham Lincoln himself didn't know how to answer that question. There's that beautiful and heartbreaking line in the second inaugural when he says, it may seem strange for any man to ask a just God to bless him for earning his bread from the sweat of another man's face, but let us not judge lest we be judged ourselves. And what Lincoln is saying in that moment is there was unambiguously a morally right and a morally wrong side, but let us not judge, because I don't know how to preserve the Union if I hold people accountable who are our brothers and sisters and neighbors and friends. The risk is no greater, but the fact that it has become partisan to defend democracy is the single biggest risk to our democracy. And if we ignore that, or we think we have to make peace with both sides, we know how that playbook plays out. Look at the Reconstruction era when we decided to kick that can down the road.
Well, I wonder how that will play out then now. U.S. Representative Sean Casten is on a phone line. Congressman, do you think it's instructive to ask that question you just posed differently? Don't paint those insurrectionists as Canadians, but as Black Americans. Do you think that sheds any light on the validity of the protest or the conversation generally?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
I think that the Republican Party and Fox News and some of the people that were propelling that would have felt differently if those were Black Americans that were climbing the wall of the Capitol.
I'm quite certain that if there were Black Americans who were involved in that, they wouldn't have been carrying Confederate flags through the walls of the Capitol. But I'm not sure that the hypothetical is illuminating, frankly. I think the question becomes, it just comes down to saying, how do we ensure a peaceful transfer of power?
Yeah.
And I think it is good and appropriate that we are holding people accountable who were there on that day, but we cannot stop if we simply hold the soldiers accountable. We know that there were generals who coordinated this. When I walked home from my office on January 5th, the hotels in D.C. were completely full of people wearing MAGA hats, walking around. It was sufficiently menacing that I called my chief of staff and I said, I want to make sure that you have a safe way to get home tonight, because I don't think you should be walking by yourself out in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Who facilitated all those people to get there? How was that organized? Because the truth is, yes, we're Americans, but we're human beings. And, the history of every government that's ever been is that there have always been people who were unhappy when there was a change in power in their government. What's remarkable about America and what's kept us going for almost a quarter of a millennium is that we have committed ourselves to letting the hard questions being decided by Democratic majorities and then abided by that decision.
I understand that. And here's my last question for you, though, Sean, and that is, but say that on January 6th, those people were peaceful. Say they didn't rally at all, or at least did not do what they did at the Senate chambers. They have a right to wear MAGA hats. They have a right to be upset about the outcome of the election. They even have a right to be wrong about the counting of the votes. I'm just wondering how we get past that fact, because you can say Donald Trump is bad and the rally was illegal and so on and so forth, the storming of the Capitol, rather, but that doesn't fix anything. That's where I think the president's speech missed the mark today. What's your response to that?
If all that January 6th was a peaceful protest with people wearing clothes that we might disagree with a slogan on it, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Right.
Right? You know, Officer Sicknick is dead. I have members, I have colleagues who are still dealing with panic attacks and PTSD. I can't go into my office without walking through a metal detector that is there to protect me from my colleagues, because I do not know whether or not they would stand up to protect me if somebody showed up to kill me because they didn't the last time. That's not a peaceful protest. And we have to acknowledge that. We have to make sure it doesn't happen again. And take comfort and optimism in the fact that the overwhelming majority of America was not there. The overwhelming majority of America does not share those values. If they did, January 6th wouldn't have happened, because they actually would have won a free and fair election for those who support those values.
Yeah, I think that's
it. And so we have to take optimism from the majority of the Americans who were there while still holding accountability for people who think that if you don't like our democracy, you can attack.
I think that's a good note to end the conversation on. Well put, U.S. Representative Sean Casten, the Democrat from Illinois 6th. Nice to talk to you, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Nice to talk to you.
I hope
Thank
you and
you.
Your family are well, too. Good luck to you on those tests, sir.
Thank you very much.